powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Wednesday, you guys. We have a fun show planned for you. Michael Bumpus is in for Jake Heaps. Hey, Bump.
What up? How you doing?
Good. How was your Tuesday?
Tuesday was pretty good. Got a lot done. Spent some time with the fam.
Good. And you guys are remodeling your house, too. Just so you guys know, Bump has got some HGTV stuff going on at his home right now.
HGTV, where there's possibilities for problems, they probably occur, and that's what happened.
Oh, no. What happened?
Just plumbing. Got to move stuff around. You know, it's never as easy as it seems.
No. Well, I mean, you got to fill the 30-minute episode.
Yeah.
So they always have to find something. Just without fail, it'll happen. Now, yesterday, I mean, you're in the middle of all the remodeling, all the crazy stuff going on in your home, so I'm not sure if you saw it, but Tyler Lockett did speak to reporters in his first press conference since signing his extension. Did you catch it?
Yes, I did. I caught pieces of it. I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I know what's going on.
Okay, wonderful. Because there's one thing that he said that we already knew, but it was great insight, and we haven't talked about it for, gosh, like 2 months now, since the end of last season. Because there was a controversial quote at the end of last season, and it was like accidentally controversial, where Tyler Lockett, who's always pretty candid as an interview, is asked, hey, what happened to you guys, basically? Like, you know, hey, you guys are done. You lost. It's the wild card game. You're all reeling from it. What happened in the second half of the season? And he basically said, we failed to adapt. We failed to adjust. So he was asked that same question months later. There's been several changes. You have Russell Wilson's comments have since happened. Brian Schottenheimer has since departed. You've since hired a new OC. All of this stuff has changed. He's asked again during this press conference, hey, what happened? And he says the same thing, but it still brings a ton of really good insight. So why don't you take a listen right here. This is specifically cut number five, what Lockett says they were doing early in the season versus later.
And that's why I said it's different. When you had that mentality, attack, 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 that's what you've seen in the first half. But when teams start to throw out different type of stuff, and now you got to start learning like, okay, this goes against our rules. Now we got to start changing certain stuff up, because now the way that we used to go, teams adapted to us. But now we got to figure out how to be able to find ways to keep moving forward and keep attacking while seeing what they're throwing at us. So that's why I said it wasn't like it was a difficult second half for us. It's just we had to truly learn what it meant to adjust when the first half we never had to.
Now, they had to learn how to adapt and adjust. You can see why that would be controversial at the end of last season. That's just Tyler Lockett being honest, right?
Yeah.
He's not saying anything people couldn't see, but most of the time, players aren't as candid. This is Tyler Lockett once again saying, look, here's what happened. Here was my point of view. We had all the pieces. We were flying high. We were looking great. We were looking like all pros. Russell Wilson was looking like MVP. We were putting up 34 points a game, which is insane. And then they started taking away the deep ball, and we didn't adjust.
Yeah. And he said we didn't adjust. And as a player, all you can do is run the play that's called. You're not having communication with the OC if you're a receiver or anything. Say, hey, let's try this. Let's do this. That's more Russell Wilson's job. So what I hear is, hey, Shoddy just couldn't adjust. He couldn't put us in positions to be successful. And I appreciate him being candid and being honest, because you don't see that a lot with the athletes, especially because you don't want to hurt the team. And that's what Pete Carroll, you know, his saying, protect the team. And Lockett does a great job of doing that. But right here, he's just speaking the truth. They didn't adjust. Everything was still down the field. They didn't take what the defense was giving them. That's why Schottenheimer's not here. It's crazy. This man helped this offense break a bunch of franchise records, and he's out of a job, at least out of Seattle.
It is weird. You feel like if the two seasons were flipped, you'd have Norton out of Seattle and Schottenheimer staying, and people would be like, is Schottenheimer going to leave to be a head coach soon? And instead, you have the two seasons flip, essentially. Now, here's why it's important. It's the same thing. Here's why it matters. You have to have a great offense or an elite defense to win a Super Bowl. Does Seattle have either?
They don't have an elite defense. They have a pretty good defense. An elite offense, I think they have the ingredients to be an elite offense, but they have to show that they can adjust and that Shane Waldron is going to come in here and sprinkle his own little spice and sauce on this offense. And see, they have the capabilities, yes, but you still got to go out and prove it. It's not like they're the Chiefs who were like, yep, next year they're going to have all those weapons. Let's roll it out and keep going. Because of all the moves and changes that have been made, it's hard to say they're having an elite offense.
Are we oversimplifying it? But like, I wondered at times last year whether, and I'll just say I, since I don't want to speak for anyone, whether I was oversimplifying it by saying, hey, you're facing like two high safeties. They're really trying to eliminate the deep ball. So why don't you have more intermediate passes? Why don't you utilize your tight ends, maybe open up with some screens, whatever it is you're doing? Why don't you do that? Like, is it oversimplifying to say that? Was that also taken away from them? I mean, how did the Rams respond, for instance, with the intermediate game? Because that's the team Shane Waldron's coming from.
Yeah. No, that's safe to say. You got two high safeties. That means, okay, we're taking away the deep ball. We're going to give you everything in front of us. We're going to take a guy outside the box. You can even run the football. We're just not going to let you have the big plays down the field that we're used to seeing. So, yeah, that's safe to say. From there, it gets more complicated. Now it's, okay, what's the depth of the corners? Is it a two high safety cover two where the corners are sitting at 5 or 6 yards? Is it a two high safety where it's cover four? The corners are flying down the field, getting 10 to 12 yards down the field. And then you look at the outside backers. So the two safety just gives that defense some protection. But now you got to look at the underneath, the second level, those linebackers and then outside on the corners. What are they doing? Mm-hmm. If they are playing cover four or they're playing a soft cover two and they're giving you 5 to 6 yards, then you take it. I think that was there for a lot of the second half of the season.
All right. Now, that was what we already knew. We have a couple minutes left here, which is why I want to get to something we didn't know. And I don't know whether this is, to me, it's just kind of juicy. It's just kind of interesting. It's just a little bit of insight that we didn't have before because there's something that happened in between the last time we heard from Tyler Lockett at the end of the season and now. And that is obviously one of the biggest stories of the NFL offseason, Russell Wilson's comments. The thing that has happened in between the last time we talked to Tyler Lockett and yesterday when the media talked to Tyler Lockett is that Russell Wilson came out and said he's tired of being hit. Mm-hmm. And it caused a media snowstorm of wondering, is he going to be traded? What's the offense going to look like without him? Was it okay for him to say this? And we all know the conversations that we've been having. Now, Tyler Lockett gives the Seahawks credit. He gives them credit because in cut number 3, he's asked about the Russell Wilson situation. He says, hey, it doesn't have anything to do with me. Then he credits the team for doing a good job in the interim. Cut 3, take a listen.
I think at the end of the day, you know, like, a lot of that is, you know, it's over there on his side. You know, that doesn't really have anything to do with me. And so just throughout all the stuff that was being said, I mean, you just got to learn how to decipher the real from the media, right? So I think a lot of the guys on the inside that work within the Seahawks did a great job being able to have those conversations with players and stuff to kind of like let them know what's the difference between what's actually been said and what wasn't said so that as a team, we can stay united and we can be able to continue to be in this thing together.
Now, I thought it was interesting, Bump, that the team was reaching out to players after all this was going down and saying, look, there's a lot of public perception about what's going to be happening with the team, the future of the team. And here's what's really going on.
I wonder how they reached out. Did they send like an email?
Well, and was it to every player? Or was it like, am I reaching out to Tyler Lockett and Penny Hart? Or am I just reaching out to Tyler Lockett?
Yeah, I would think reached out to the leaders of the position group.
Right.
So for the receivers, it would be Lockett.
The
for the running backs,
guys.
Carson, O-line, you go Dwayne Brown. If that is the case, good job for the Seahawks. Because a lot of organizations, at least from our perception, it looked like they're just sitting back and saying, all right, let's see what happens. So that tells me that they were strategic on how they maneuvered and they let their guys know, like, this is what's happening. One of the worst places to be is in the dark, especially when you're in the dark and it looks like your quarterback is on his way out.
Mm-hmm.
So for the Hawks to communicate with their guys, their leaders, I think that's awesome. And a guy like Lockett, I feel like he's going to go out and he's going to talk to DK. He's going to talk to Penny. He's going to talk to all these guys and just reassure them and keep everything calm. That's why we didn't see these guys blowing up on Twitter. You know, because they understand this is also a way you protect the team, keep your family business in-house, even though your quarterback didn't do that.
Well, and you reach out to tell them, like, hey, I know that you're reading right now that Russell Wilson wants to be traded to these teams and that John Schneider's meeting with the Bears, but here's our plan for this. I don't know if that's really what they told them, but, I mean, it's important to do that, and it kind of makes any moves by like Mark Rogers look not so great, right? The team sitting here trying to calm some fires and put out fires. And meanwhile, Russell's agents like, here's the teams we would be traded to. And the team's probably like, oh my God, please stop. We're trying here. But I mean, it's important to do, right? Like it's, I agree with Lockett. Like it's not you that said anything or that's being affected, but when it's the quarterback, no other position on this team affects your future with your team more than the quarterback.
Yeah, and Lockett understands that Russell plays by a different set of rules. He is the franchise quarterback. You hear him mention, that's Russ's deal. You know, Russ is over there. You know, Russ is at the top floor and we're somewhere in the middle, just trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents. So it was a complicated offseason, but at this point I feel like, okay, all is good, at least for now. Let's get back to work. Sounds like the communication's been on point with everyone other than Russell Wilson. How do they move forward from here? Focus on the draft. Get ready to play some ball.
Now, there's some other things we learned from Tyler Lockett or had a chance to hear from Tyler Lockett. Cut one, for instance, this is him on new offensive coordinator Shane Waldron.
We haven't been able to, like, go over a whole bunch of stuff. You just got to be able to have those conversations and listen and try to understand what to expect. If there's new plays or new formations to learn, it's like, okay, got to go back to study mode as if I'm in college again. But I think everybody has said so many great things about Shane. And, you know, I'm looking forward to being able to meet him. I met him whenever I was going into the facility to sign. He was just outside and I was able to say hi and stuff. But for the most part, man, like I'm just looking forward to being able to play, being able to get to know him, get to know his family. And the biggest thing that I've learned is football is about relationships.
Let's talk just receivers for a second, Bump. Your former receiver, Tyler Lockett's a receiver. We're talking about an offensive coordinator coming in. What's something you're hoping Shane Waldron can do specifically for this receiver group? Because I go back to that question about, hey, you got to have an elite offense or an elite defense or both, as hard as that is. But you got to be elite somewhere on your team to win a Super Bowl. Average teams do not win Super Bowls. What are you hoping he can do specifically with the receivers?
I'm hoping he can create a scheme or scenarios where they get the ball quickly and you let them do the work for you. You look at this pass game last year. Now, receivers are running down the field. They're trying to get open. Russell has to throw a deep bomb for it to all happen. You don't have to do that all the time. You can run a shallow crossing route, even a deep crossing route, a speed out screens. Just get the football to your playmakers early. And even Gerald Everett, man, he's not your average tight end. And he's come off of 400-something yards like that. But I watch him. He can play receiver. He can go up on the outside. So move your guys around. We saw DK move into the slot. We saw Lockett go everywhere with the jet sweeps, the motions. I'm looking for creativity when it comes to pre-snap and just finding ways to get the ball to your playmakers early without Russell having to get back into a 90s drop, tap the ball a couple times and let it go.
Now, Tyler also spoke about the team's players' decision to skip in-person OTAs. We're going to get to that in three questions. We'll also get to it later in the show and tell you guys everything we need to know. So without further ado, it's 11:15. That means it's time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question one, we got the news this morning. The Seahawks are bringing in veteran pass rusher Aldon Smith for a visit. So is the risk of bringing in someone with his past worth the potential reward?
I think it is. This team's ready to win right now. And for 5 years, he set out, had a decent season with the Dallas Cowboys last year, five sacks. Shows that he can still play. And you know how this game goes, Stace. The more talented you are, the more opportunities you're going to get. There's no denying the talent this guy has. I think at this point of Russell's career, of Pete Carroll's career, of Bobby Wagner's career, you're bringing talented guys in no matter what happened. Now, Antonio Brown's a different story, more recent history. He's got some stuff to work out. So I wouldn't touch that. But I feel like Smith, he's set for a while. He showed that he can still play, kept his nose clean. Bring the guy in, take a look.
Two guys that the Seahawks have brought in seasons past that had some questionable decisions in their past, questionable things in their past, and it ended up not really costing the Seahawks much of anything, Deion Jordan, Josh Gordon. Two guys that they brought in, and they were low-cost, kind of high-ceiling, high-reward things, and there was really no consequence. It was obviously a total bummer for Josh Gordon what happened with him. It's just a really upsetting end, maybe, to his career. I'm sure, hopefully he gets another chance, but let's say for his season, certainly with Seattle. Deion Jordan gets another shot. I think he went to the 49ers, but he ends up getting injured and it doesn't work out. Neither of them really worked out. There was no real consequence for Seattle. You know where there has been consequence, and Curtis, I know you're going to echo me here. It's not when they bring in guys that have some questionable decisions in the past. It's when they bring in guys that have had great careers that aren't having great careers anymore, and then they overpay them. Look at Greg Olsen. Mm. Look at Ziggy Ansah. I mean, they didn't overpay Clowney because he was on a franchise tag anyway. That wasn't going to change. And, he ended up, I won't quite include him there, but that's been when they've gotten in trouble. It's not taking the, you know, high reward, low cost guys with risky backgrounds. It's bringing in the guys that you're expecting to be stars who just don't have it anymore.
You said expecting to be stars. If
right.
Smith were to come in here, it's like, look, you get in the rotation and we'll see what happens. It's not like, all right, Smith, you are the final piece.
You're our hope.
To making this team go to Super Bowl. No.
No.
We can use you, though.
You're not our Obi-Wan. It's okay, though. It's okay.
Number two.
With players around the NFL skipping voluntary workouts, do you guys think we'll ever see players meet before minicamp again?
So I'll just give some quick background to this because this is the one I talked about with Tyler Lockett so that we all know. So voluntary workouts are set to begin for NFL teams on Monday. So far, Seahawks players and players from the Denver Broncos and Tampa Bay Buccaneers have issued statements, the same statement through the NFLPA saying, hey, without, you know, total safe protocols in place and we're still in a pandemic, we feel like there was no big consequence to the season as far as quality of play with a virtual offseason last year. And so for right now, we're going to go ahead and decline to participate in voluntary workouts at facilities where some players have contracted COVID. Instead, we're going to ask that we continue to do virtual offseason workouts. So that's the background story. I have no problem with it. I think implying that anyone is weak, especially in a group of professional athletes, for wanting to do that is just kind of a toxic mindset in the first place. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing, though.
Yeah,
don't think so.
I agree. It's not going to be a long-term thing. I think as soon as people see the world is safe again and they can go out and live normal lives, guys want to be coached up. Maybe not the veterans, the 10, 12-year guy, but the guys who are first year one through five, they want to be coached up. They want as many opportunities as they can to get better and to show their coaches they can play. And I think that's the majority of the league. It's only 1% of the guys sit in the league who are just sitting comfy right now. So mm-hmm. I think as the world gets back to normal, as new coaches come in as well, because you got new head coaches, new coordinators, they're going to want to see their guys. And anyone who's been in the game long enough, you understand it's all about the preparation. There's a reason why you prepare for football for 5 to 6 months and you're only playing in four of them. It's such a sport where you have to prepare or it's going to be evident. And as things start to change or get back to normal, I think we'll see more teams kind of get back in the groove.
Now, there are some things I think that people on the sports reporting side or whatever are going to have to push for. For instance, I could see some increased locker room restrictions or player interview restrictions that teams try to keep post-COVID. And I can see, obviously, the NFL Writers Association pushing back and try to say, well, wait a minute, we also need access to players for interviews. So that's something I could see the NFL trying to stick with. The NFL wants players to be there for voluntary workouts. So it's going to do everything it can to try to make sure that that happens in the future. I think that's why specifically I don't see it happening. I know that players are concerned for safety, and even before COVID were, I'm going to guess, worried and pushing for less intense workouts in the offseason and just protecting their bodies more in the offseason and preseason. But yeah, I in this case, I genuinely believe that it's out of an abundance of caution and being safe. And I'm not going to hate on any player for that, especially when your body is your job.
Yep.
Number three.
Outgoing Timberwolves owner Glenn Taylor said in an interview Tuesday that it's in the NBA's best interest to expand to Seattle rather than relocate to Seattle. So do you think it's more likely now that Seattle gets a team back via expansion or by relocation?
I'm going to say expansion. We talked about this a little bit this week, a little bit last week. Snatching a team from another city, I'm all for it. You know, L.A., Dodgers, and this is what we do in L.A.
Love that about you,
Paul. You know? It's just not a great look. And I think that every franchise in the NBA has a following. I know they're talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves. They don't fill up their arenas, but when they're hot, people are going to show up. Why not just expand? Let Minnesota have their team if that's the way it's going to be, but expand to Seattle. I like the feel of that better than snatching a team. Mm-hmm. But like I said, go get them. If you want to go get it, money talks.
You know, Curtis, we were just mentioning this too, where we were talking about what would coverage of the Sonics being relocated to OKC look like now versus when it actually happened. Like, it's a different world now. I think it would be covered differently. And Curtis said, I don't even think it would happen. And I think you're right. I think Seattle is the last team we're going to see that goes through that relocation, especially in such like a really shady way. Right? Like a really messed up way. Like, I don't think the NBA would let it happen anymore. I hate being the case study as a city for it. Like, I hate being the last city to have that happen and for them to be like, oh, we don't want another Sonics situation. Mm. Like, oh, I wish you would have decided to do that before. But I think that the NBA is going to be more careful about relocating. And I think expansion is something they're going to be open to more so than in years past.
Adam Silver also seems like a commissioner. Now, this is obviously, I've never spent any time around him, but he seems a little more human than David Stern did when Stern was in charge of that league. Stern ruled with an iron fist, and Adam Silver seems to be a little more conscious of the public opinion of him. And moving franchises, that is a surefire way to get people mad at you.
1,000%. Now, we've already talked about a couple of these things this morning. The biggest stories you're going to need to know in the NFL and for the Seahawks, for instance, Tyler Lockett sounding off about what happened to the offense in the second half of the year and his thoughts on new OC Shane Waldron. You've got players who are opting out of voluntary workouts, and you've got Aldon Smith, who's going to come visit the Seahawks for a workout. Could he be signing with the team? No better person to ask than ESPN's Brady Henderson. He joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Got lots of news and questions about the Seahawks this morning. Who better to bring on than ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Brady, how are you? Are you on your boat right now?
Sort of. I actually walked up to the parking lot just because the reception is a little better up here than it is. But now we're, you know, dealing with big trucks passing by. So I guess you can't really win when I'm doing radio interviews from here.
We can't hear them in the background. So, that's good. You're good. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. Seahawks reportedly bringing in Aldon Smith for a workout. How serious is this? Could they use him? I mean, is this just kind of out of curiosity, or do you think there's a real chance the Seahawks could actually continue to add a veteran on the edge?
Yeah, no, it's very real from what I understand. I was told that, you know, they also had strong interest in him last offseason, and they were one of the finalists. He ended up signing with Dallas. I think it was Dallas, Seattle, and one other team. And so from what I understand, there was very serious interest last year. My colleague, Todd Archer, who covers the Cowboys for ESPN, he reported that the Seahawks tried to make a trade for him at the deadline last year. So this is a player that they have had their eyes on pretty heavily for the last year. And so, I think the interest is real there. If it does happen, I wonder if it would be something – if it would be more after the draft, and a couple reasons there. You know, one, a couple days after the draft, May 3rd, that's when free agents would no longer count against the compensatory pick formula. So if he were to sign a deal that would qualify for a deal to factor into that compensatory pick formula, it would not count after May 3rd. So in other words, it would not potentially cost the Seahawks a comp pick next year. And I wonder if maybe that's a situation where, they look to see what's available in the draft. From what I'm told, this is not a very good defensive line draft. So maybe they see what's there. And if they don't get something there, then they circle back to Aldon Smith after the draft.
Hey, Brady, let's talk receivers. David Moore is gone. Philip Dorsett is gone. Freddie Swain looks like he's holding down that number three spot. Of course, I expect the Hawks to bring somebody in to compete. Do you think Freddie wins that number three spot or someone else beats him out?
Yeah, I'm with you there, Bub. I think that they will bring somebody in to compete for that job. But from what I understand, you know, from what I was told last year, they are really high on him. And now, you know, they're high on him in that type of role. You know, they're not thinking that he's going to be a number one, probably not a number two receiver. But I think that, that they view him as a guy who can fill, you know, one of those back end of the wide receiver rotation spots for a number of years. He's a guy who, I've heard him described as, just a gritty guy, a guy who shows up every day, practices even when he's hurt, really accepts his role, you know, has no, you know, illusions that he's, you know, should be getting the targets that DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are. So I think they really like him, but I don't think that's going to stop them from bringing in somebody, maybe a veteran guy to compete for that role. That was the David Moore role last year. He's gone. Josh Gordon is not available. I don't know if he's going to be available. I could definitely see them bringing in somebody. Maybe it's a draft pick, but I would think that, you know, given the fact that, you know, a draft pick would be counting on a pretty young guy to jump into that role. It's we don't know exactly what that offense is going to look like, but, you know, the Sean McVay offense, even the Brian Schottenheimer offense, that was a very heavy, on three receivers. And so, that third receiver in Seattle typically plays a lot. So I wonder if that might be a lot to ask of a young guy. So I would think that it's either going to be Freddie Swain, a second-year guy, or a veteran that they bring in.
You're here with Stacey Rost and Michael Bumpus on 710 ESPN Seattle. We're speaking with ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson. Brady, the Seahawks reportedly had a lot of interest in Giovanni Bernard. He's since signed with the Buccaneers. Should that tell us anything about their faith in Rashad Penny, or was this a depth piece, someone to replace Carlos Hyde? I mean, I got to admit, I was a little nervous about, you know, their own confidence in Penny after hearing that report.
Yeah, I thought the same thing too. And, you know, I have not seen the deal that Giovanni Bernard signed. I've not seen the size of that deal. I think that'll, that'll kind of be telling. It just sort of depends on what the Seahawks were willing to offer him, because that would be the indication of, you know, how badly they felt like they needed him. And, you know, he's been, you know, one of those change of pace, you know, smaller, shiftier pass catching running backs. And, Penny obviously is not a small guy, but he is a guy who is a very good receiver out of the backfield. So it does make you wonder if, you know, they had that third receiver role in mind for Bernard. That's the role that you think that, that Penny is going to fill. But maybe, you know, maybe they view Penny as more of that early down compliment to Carson, the way that Carlos Hyde was last year. And maybe they feel like they need, somebody else for that third down back, who's going to be more of the pass catcher. So yeah, I'm with you. It's hard to not wonder about how they feel about Penny, seeing that they went after Bernard, but maybe maybe they're feeling like Penny is going to fill more of the Carlos Hyde role this year.
Hey Brady, the Hawks bring in Gabe Jackson, obviously, to help out with protection. You bring in Shane Waldron as well. Is the offense fixed? Are we going to see Russell Wilson being sacked not as much as he has over the past? Or what's your overall feel of the direction of this offense and protecting Russell Wilson?
Yeah, you mentioned Waldron. I think that's going to be a bigger impact, or at least they feel like it's going to have a bigger impact on the pass protection issue than I think a lot of people realize. And that is an offense. Again, we don't know what this offense is going to look like. We don't know if it's going to be a carbon copy of the Sean McVay system. We don't know if it's going to be some of that blended with what Seattle's already done. They've, you know, really haven't given us any indication. We obviously haven't seen them on the field yet, so we're sort of guessing now. But I would imagine that they are going to really incorporate a lot of the short to intermediate stuff that was a staple of that Rams offense. And, you know, that's what that offense was missing in the second half of last season. And you heard Tyler Lockett talk yesterday about, you know, how teams were forcing them to adjust. And, you know, from what I understand, talking to people in the league who know more about the X's and O's than I do, it's, you know, teams started taking away their deep passing game with more, two deep safety looks, and they didn't have the short to intermediate passing game to combat that, you know, by taking what was available there. And so I think that that's going to be a big part of the solution to the pass protection issues, is just relying more on the short to intermediate stuff. Gabe Jackson's certainly going to help. I also wonder if there's another move up their sleeve. You know, maybe they bring in somebody to compete with Ethan Posick at center. I don't think the deal that they gave Ethan Posick, $3 million for 1 year, I don't think that really locks him into a starting job necessarily. And so, I think between the two moves they've already made, I think that it should be better than it was at the end of last season when they really struggled.
Hey, Brady, real quick, non-football question. I know you're a golfer. One, how's your game right now? Is it ready for the summer? And two, did you enjoy seeing Matsuyama win the Masters last week?
I did, yeah. I thought that that was really cool just for the game in general and for what that's going to mean back in Japan. I really enjoyed seeing him win. I enjoyed seeing, his caddy take the bat when he was pulling the flag out and everything. So as far as my game, it's in a better place than it has been, but every now and again, you have those rounds where you just think, like, what am I doing? Do I know how to play golf? Like, what's going on here? So that's just the battle for all golfers, and even especially us amateurs. How's your game, Michael?
It's coming along. I broke 80 for the first time this year, two rounds in a row. So
nice.
I'm almost ready for you, Brady. I don't know if I'm ready yet, but I'm almost there.
Hey, let's do it, man. You tell me when.
All right. He is Brady Henderson. You can read his work at ESPN.com. Follow him at Brady Henderson. Brady, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, Brady mentioned this. He said it's very real. Alden Smith coming to the Seahawks for a workout. He says that interest is very real. That interest has been there before. Would you want to see him on the Seahawks defensive line? 710-710. Join that conversation. We're talking that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Weather permitting, there's some rain in the forecast. The Mariners will take on the Orioles in game 3 of the 4-game series. Justin Dunn gets the start today against Matt Harvey. Pre-game starts at 3 p.m. First pitch scheduled for 4:05 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle. You guys can follow Shannon Dreyer at Shannon Dreyer, Mariners insider here for 710 ESPN Seattle. She just posted the lineup, and then she added that there's a lot of rain in the forecast. So I'm following her for updates. Recommend you do the same. And we'll obviously let you guys know if that gets postponed, as will Wyman and Bob, who follow us. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Bumpus, Seahawks are having a visitor. It's Alden Smith, cut number 6 from Ian Rappaport. He says Smith has a visit with the Seahawks, and they've had some interest for a while.
You know, Alden Smith, who last year came on so strong for the Dallas Cowboys early in the season, 50 pressures overall, along with 5 sacks. He is visiting the Seattle Seahawks today, potential big-time addition to their defense, one that would really be low-risk, potentially high-rewarded, a player who I know Seattle has had their eyes on for some time. So long, Mike, that when he made that big splash entrance for the Dallas Cowboys, it was so disruptive, a bunch of times on national TV. At some point midway through last season, Seattle tried to trade for Alden Smith. Cowboys did not want to do it, so fast forward a couple months, and now he is in for a visit, a real potential that Seattle ends up with the guy they've wanted for a very long time.
That's Rappaport saying it would be a low risk, high reward that could have a big impact. Here's my question for you, Bump. We know it's low risk, high reward. I don't have to ask you. We already know. But the question is, would he be a high impact? Like, would this be a guy that could actually make a big impact for you?
He could be a guy. 6.5 sacks last year with the Dallas Cowboys. He led the team there. You get 6.5 sacks on this defense, you're probably, second or third when it comes to sacks.
Yeah.
You need a 6.5 sack type of guy. Most importantly, you need a guy in a rotation. And then, again, I'm always going to mention this name when I speak of that D-line, Daryl Taylor. We still haven't seen him. So now you're bringing a veteran. Daryl Taylor can learn from him and Kerry Hyder. Don't forget Benson Mayoa. I'm starting to like the depth of this defense or defensive line if you get Alden Smith. Smith, come on up to the Northwest. You can be yourself. Pete Carroll's not going to be all over you. As long as you stay out of trouble, you will enjoy your time here.
Well, and if I'm a defensive end, here's the appeal of coming to Seattle. I'm not going to a group where I'm a wide receiver and I know that I'm going to have to fight for targets with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and I'm not beating those guys out.
Yeah.
If I'm a defensive end, if I show up and show out, I can be the star. Like, they don't have a star etched in stone. Yes, Kerry Hyder will get a shot, though he's more of a he's taking over kind of where LJ Collier was, where Michael Bennett would play. Alden Smith, would he be competing at more of like that Cliff Averill role? So that role still feels up for grabs. Obviously, you have Dunlap coming back here, but this could be his last year with Seattle. Who knows? You've got Daryl Taylor, who we haven't seen, who'll be competing there. Alton Robinson, who can seemingly play either side, but he's competing there too. Benson Mayoa competing there. There's no guy that's like, this is my job. Write it in Sharpie. It's mine to lose. I'm getting paid $22 million a year. No, you can take it. It's up for grabs.
Yeah, it's up for grabs. And this is a guy at one point was probably the most dominant defensive lineman in the game. Put him up there with Aaron Donald. I mean, this guy is special. And when you add that type of talent to Carlos Dunlap, Kerry Hyder, all those names that you just mentioned, that stuff is contagious. You know, now, again, these young guys don't feel the pressure to have to lead this team when it comes to sacks or tackles or whatever. You have some veterans who have been there, who've done that, who can show you the way. And you just learn from those guys. I'm excited about this. The more that we talk about it, the more that I look into Smith, the more I'm like, oh, yeah, I can feel this.
Why are you excited about him?
Just because of the depth. And I know when he was with the 49ers, he was a problem.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is special when it comes to physical talents. And I think he still has a bunch of gas left in the tank. He's set for 5 years. I mean, this dude is probably 30-something that has the body of a 20-something-year-old because he sat down for a while. And I think people can come to Seattle and get rejuvenated. There's something about when guys come here to where they're like, okay, let's try something different. This is a different coaching style than I'm used to. It's a different environment. I'm hoping that he feels the love. Signs on the dotted line.
All right. Now, Brady Henderson of ESPN, who we just had join with us, says two things that are very important to note if you're a Seahawks fan, all of you are. Number one, Alden Smith could be signed after the draft. He said May 3rd is when those free agent acquisitions don't count against comp picks. So the Seahawks could be waiting until after May 3rd to sign a guy like Alden Smith. So if he leaves Seattle and you don't hear about a signing, as long as he doesn't sign anywhere else, don't take the Seahawks off the board. They could still be interested. It's kind of what happened with Ziggy Ansah. The number two thing that Brady said is that this isn't an especially deep draft class for defensive linemen. And important to note, Seahawks only have three picks. So are they going to use one there? That, to me, Bump, that when Brady said both those things, I was like, man, this just got really real.
Yeah.
This might be happening.
Yeah. And you said it. Be patient. May 3rd. That's when we'll figure something out, I guess, if Alden Smith is going to be here or not. But again, it comes down to depth. It comes down to experience. And just like I feel about this offense, this defense is close to being really good. We saw that towards the end of last year. Maybe he's the piece that pushes them over the top, but also a plus, you're not relying on the guy. If we were relying on this guy to be the centerpiece of this defense and to be the guy to lead the charge, then I feel differently about it. Give me 4 or 5 sacks.
Now, I always ask this type of question to you when you normally join Jake and I on Fridays, but I always like these questions. It's the fill-in-the-blank questions.
Okay.
So here we go for defense. This defense becomes a, I don't want to say Super Bowl caliber since they've still got a lot of young guys, but this defense has a much improved season if blank has the year of his life.
If blank has the year of his life, I'm going to say it's the corner spots. It's either Witherspoon or it's DJ. Because you look at that box, you like the box. You got Bobby, maybe KJ, Jordan Brooks, Alden Robinson, Vincent Mayoa, Kerry Dunlap, all these guys inside that box that I feel like are going to take some pressure off of these corners because they're going to get to the quarterback. They're going to make them step up in the pocket and hopefully toss some footballs up there and turn them over. Now it's the guys on the outside. I feel good about Jamal. I feel good about Diggs. It's the corners now. If either of the corners have the year of their lives, this defense is looking dangerous.
I think you're right because that's really the spot that I'm concerned about. If they are addressing, even if they just addressed one defensive spot in the draft, I would want it to be at corner. I've got serious questions. Seeing how bad this defense was against the pass last year just gives me anxiety about what this cornerback group could look like if they don't step it up.
Yeah, the pass game, that was rough. Were they worse against the pass last year, I want to say? So you think, okay, this team is bad against the pass, there has to be something in the secondary. Yeah, secondary can get better. But how do you help the secondary? You cause havoc inside the box. This defense has the potential to do that.
All right, we have two very hilarious clips coming up at 12:30 for the timeline, one about Anthony Edwards. You guys are going to like this one. It's going to make you feel 95 years old, but I'm coming around on it. The other one from Aaron Rodgers and his Jeopardy stint. By the way, Curtis, I know you're not the biggest Rodgers fan of other Rodgers. Aaron doing a pretty good job, though, with Jeopardy.
He's holding it down.
Okay.
He's holding it down.
Okay. Now, before we get to any of that, though, we have another Seahawks draft prospect profile. This one's going to be on a wide receiver, so take a listen. That's coming up next.